David Abramson, he's a psychologist in private practice. He's joining us in the studio today, and we want to discuss corruption fatigue. Do something, and I feel like we need, don't we need different music for that?
Like X-Files.
Do you think that's what it is?
Yeah.
I can't decide.
After a Greasy dropped all the files.
That's quite cute. I like that. All right, what is the theme that we need for, you know, this one's not bad either. Because he survived, eh? He survived his testimony. I think this is the perfect theme for it, don't you think? We've survived the corruption, haven't we? More or less.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and it's not just Greasy. I think this has been going on for so many years, where we are bombarded with so much. And every second week there's a huge story breaking around corruption in our country.
So this is the problem, is we almost find it too difficult to cognate. You know, there's so many different hearings going on. It's like we've got like Netflix for corruption. Not even all corruption. There's PRC, there's the state capture. It just doesn't stop. We're like, you almost don't know what to watch anymore.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, from a psychological perspective, there's no question that we talk about desensitization of any experience. So it could be a positive experience. So if you get too much of a good thing, you lose out on how good it feels.
Mm-hmm.
And same with negative experiences. When we hear, for example, we're talking about corruption over and over and over again, it's very hard to keep that intensity psychologically at the same level over time, because it just feels endless.
So could that be the reason? Because I was contemplating this the whole of yesterday. It bothered me tremendously, even though I thought maybe there's something positive in it, that Greasy has spent weeks detailing a level of corruption that actually wants to make us throw up. We cannot get over the amount of corruption that he has revealed that he was part of. And then the day before yesterday, he also reveals that he's a racist. And we go, oh, no, not a racist. You can't be a racist. Like, excuse me? What were we thinking? This guy is, there's no level that they wouldn't go to in terms of corruption. But we're horrified that he's a racist. Like, that was the one line that he was never going to cross. So is it that because we were just, it was different, and therefore we could be outraged?
I think you know, racism obviously is a very, very sensitive subject in South
Africa.
Sure,
as it should be.
As it should be.
Mm.
And clearly we aren't desensitized to that. So when someone is accused of being a racist,
that's interesting.
We still respond, and we still stand up, and we're horrified. Because
it's not that we think it's worse.
Mm-mm.
It's just that we're not desensitized to it.
We are not desensitized to it. But when it comes to things like corruption, violence, you know, unfortunately, you know, when we, you know, it was a terrible event in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago when an Israeli student was murdered.
Mm.
I think it was thousands, maybe not tens of thousands of people on the street in Melbourne protesting because they're not desensitized to it. And in South Africa, we tend to just, you know, move on with life.
It would have been, perhaps it would have been a new story. It probably would have been because it was a foreigner, but then that would have been, that would have been. I'll never forget many years ago, and it's a cartoon that stuck with me because it kind of summed up the whole situation. There was a spate of drive-by shootings, and I don't know if you recall that. And in the paper, in the Star, they used to have, I don't know if they still do because I don't get the Star anymore, but they used to have the Madam and Eve column, comic, and it was sort of, they were sitting around eating and somebody came by and gunfire, and they're shooting and whatever, and they dived down, and you know, they were now sort of under the table, and Eve says, you know, do you think that we've been desensitized to the sort of thing? You know, Madam says, I'm not sure, but why don't you just pass me the potatoes, please? And, you know, and to me that did summarize it perfectly.
Yeah, and I think for me it's also the obviously the era we live in. I mean, we have got a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week news cycle, and we just get every detail of every event. So if you have it, you know, there's events on the other side of the world, we hear about it. But certainly, like we've seen with the Greasy situation, we get the minutia of the whole process. And I think, again, that does play a role in our desensitization. And I think that's part of the solution, is that we need to be very careful not to overindulge like we do with anything. Could be food, could be, you know.
So you're saying protect ourselves from it. Mark Luba, I do see your message. I'm actually not going to get into it because I don't want to take the conversation to be about racism, black on white racism, white on black racism, etc. And if I go that route, then it's going to steer the conversation completely in the wrong direction. What I want to really focus on is how we deal with this corruption fatigue that we're clearly dealing with. Something that you appear to be suggesting, David, is that maybe try and not feed on the trough of this cesspool.
Well, I think
so many mixed metaphors there. I do apologize. Yeah,
it's called apostate. You're allowed it.
A mixed metaphor.
Yes,
before 8:30 in the morning, most definitely not. Anyway, but thank you for trying to be understanding.
I hear you, Howard. For me, you know, we talk about something called systematic desensitization, and it's actually the owner of this, or the person who brought this to the forefront, is actually someone called Joseph Welpy, who's actually a South African. He went to Parktown Boys High, went to Wits University, one of our best exports as far as psychology and psychiatry.
Yeah, brilliant.
And he spoke about this and introduced this whole system of systematic desensitization. Now, where it fits into psychology is that it can actually be something very positive. So, you know, there's three steps to it.
Okay.
Desensitization can be very positive when we look at things like
getting over a fear
and anxiety. And he divided into three steps, the first one being you need to learn to relax, relaxation exercises, and then you identify a hierarchy of anxieties, and we work on the ones that are you know, where you feel less anxious, and you resolve that with your deal with it. You get exposed to it either in your imagination or really in real life. And then you move down the hierarchy, and then eventually you become desensitized, you know, to whatever it might be, a phobia of dogs, a phobia of spiders, and I'm certainly going to bring in snakes because that's something.
Because that's one of yours.
Yeah, absolutely. So in a way, it can be very, very positive, and we do use it in psychology very often.
Okay.
And I think we can apply it very broadly into our lives when it comes to being desensitized to certain things. And again, it's about not allowing yourself to be exposed where possible. It's very difficult, for example, driving around Johannesburg, not to get to a robot where someone is asking for money.
And not to ultimately be desensitized towards it.
And I do remember a while ago the chief rabbi saying, be mindful and see it as an opportunity to give.
Right.
And I think for me, that's such an important point, is about being mindful. And I know, you know, these days it's a very in, you know, it's, what's your word when you say it's in vogue or...
woke. No, it's not woke. It's on fleek.
Oh, it's on fleek. Very much mindfulness is on fleek. You know, you've got to be aware. But I think that it's very, you know, it is overdone, and I think, but there's something to it. And I think very...
But on the other hand, you're saying don't be too aware.
No, I think for me, it's about being aware of what you are digesting.
Got it.
So, you know, again, you know, the amount of information is endless. We're not going to be able to control. And actually, I think for me, it's very good that we have a free press and we're able to.
Of course, it's what we needed in order to
have this process.
To uncover the corruption.
But I think what's so important is that we only digest the amounts that we can, you know, we only take in, we only eat, we only consume the amount of information that we can digest, so that we are not desensitized and that we're not feeling overwhelmed by, you know, by these things, which actually we should be very sensitive to.
Absolutely. I'm chatting to David Abramson. He's a psychologist in a private practice, and we are talking about corruption fatigue. David Abramson, psychologist in private practice, he's in studio, and he's saying definitely, I think that's what you're saying, that we are being desensitized, which means we effectively don't even really integrate much of what's happening. Whereas when he makes a comment about himself being a racist, we're not fatigued yet from that, so therefore we react to that. And David, what you're saying further is restrict your exposure to this type of negativity, perhaps.
Well, I think, you know, again, that word's coming out of mindful. Let's be mindful. You know, we are in control of what we see and what we listen to. And so it's really about developing positive, you know, we spoke last week about habits, but developing positive habits. If you are exposing yourself too much to a stream of information, it's no, you know, as we were talking about the desensitization, there's no question that from a psychological, neurological point of view, you are going to be desensitized. And we see that in so many areas of life these days, like, for example, I would imagine compared to years gone by, we're so used to seeing violence, whether it's real or unreal, you know, and we don't really react like we did in the past. When we do hear about a terrible terrorist attack, yes, we react, but certainly not to the degree that we did in the past. And I think for me, it's so important that we do just be very, very aware of what we consume. And again, it seems like, you know, we're not in control these days. We just seem to be slaves to our, you know, to our phone and to the amount of information that we consume. And it's so important to take control.
So you're effectively saying that this doesn't just apply to these corruption hearings, but also to everything else. It's anything that just too much of it becomes negative.
Well, we live in a very, can I say, very fluid society in South Africa. I mean, the headlines are just always so sensational and so, you know, unbelievable that after a while, yeah, we just read things like they are just the headlines. And I think, again, it's really about being aware. And same when we're watching, you know, I actually am a fan of UFC. I don't know if you know that.
Really? I didn't know that.
And wow. Actually, I was watching UFC last night, and I mean, the amount of blood actually is just horrific.
Unacceptable, yes.
And I sat back and thought, you know, like, this is, I'm actually desensitized to it, that I'm now watching two men and sometimes ladies actually harm themselves to the degree that they do, yes, voluntarily, but the amount of blood and swelling and bruising, you become desensitized to it. And I think for me, that's the kind of thing that's happening to myself and to many, many people in society, because we're exposed to things and it's kind of accepted as the norm.
And I guess if you extend this a little bit further, you could take it to every part of our lifestyle. You know, now that Netflix is available to us on all of our cell phones and TVs, and you can just binge watch, there's almost no measure to anything anymore.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting that these corruption hearings are almost viewed in a similar way. We're binging on all of this stuff.
You know, and I think it's also, you know, we come down to instant gratification. You know, we want to know things. We find very difficult to wait, very difficult not to consume. And that's also something we need to be aware of, that instant gratification is in our human nature, and we need to try and, instead of just
curtail that.
Yeah, curtail that, absolutely.
We're going to come back to David Abramson just after our news headlines.
In your headlines, 43 people killed after migrant boats sink in Djibouti. The boats capsized half an hour into their voyage. 7 people killed in polar vortex in the U.S. People could experience a frostbite within just 10 minutes of being outside. Please Call Me Inventor gives Vodacom until 10 a.m. for payment. The Please Call Me movement wants to stage sit-ins at stores. And school in Pietermaritzburg receives new toilets. A Malulu A Pretoria company has donated 16 dry toilets to the school. Catch the full bulletin at 9 a.m.
Thanks, Anati. Time is 8:31. Mike says, David, how much has the violent gaming games affected our desensitized state of being to the real world. And following the similar line of concern, Jenny says, what about kids and what they were exposed to? Before information age, parents protected us from the news and upsetting information. Surely there must be a toll on kids today. And I think it's a very, very good point, because, you know, you can still see it with parents, and certainly a lot of our friends who have young children don't talk about necessarily violent, upsetting, distressing things in front of their children, simply because there's no real need. But after a certain period, by the time they get to 11 or 12 and they've got a cell phone, whatever that age is that each parent decides, everything is available.
Oh, that's a fantastic question, and I think it's multi-layered. I think the first thing to say is that if we look at the extreme, there's always this perception that if your average child is exposed to violence, that you know, it results in people doing horrific things like getting guns and shooting people, and that's really not the case. You know, it's such a minuscule percentage of children who are exposed to violence because of their past difficulties, because of their you know, their upbringing and their traumatic, usually, upbringing lead to an enactment of that of the violence. So let's just look, you know, that's the extreme. But I think for me, absolutely, that children today are exposed to way too much information too early. And I think that's why we're seeing this very big spike in the amount of anxiety, amongst other things. But definitely the idea of just being exposed to too much too soon has led to a huge spike in anxiety around the world. And I think it's very important, again, that we, number one, I think the first thing is to say to our children, if you do hear anything, come to us. We'll explain it to you. Because it's very, you know, you don't want your nine-year-old to get information from another nine-year-old. You'd rather that they get the information from you. So, again, very important to keep those lines of communication open. And then secondly, I think, very importantly, that yes, we're not trying to put blinkers on our children. We're not trying to keep them away from the reality of the world. But I do think for me it's appropriate at times to switch off the radio. At times it is appropriate to turn down the TV when your child walks in, when there is horrific news or very graphic news. So it's not about hiding them from it, but understanding that developmentally, that are still children, and they
aren't necessarily ready for this.
They're not, and we talk about being desensitized. I think we are becoming, as parents, more and more desensitized to that, because we're becoming more desensitized. Our calibration has changed.
There's no question about that. You know, it's interesting. I always recall a story of my late grandfather. He grew up in Germany, and he was telling me about his bar mitzvah. Now, it's our family custom. The way in which it works is that the Shabbat, or the Torah portion on the day, on the week that you're born, for a Jewish male 13 years later, or that particular one, is your bar mitzvah parsha. Many people, you know, move it around for convenience. It's always been our family custom that we don't, and we try and stick to the very same one. But he told me once that they moved his portion when, you know, back in Germany, and the reason that they moved it was because it spoke about, his Torah portion spoke about the twins of Jacob and Esau in Rebekah's stomach. And they didn't feel that it was appropriate for a young boy of 13 years old to be to be reading about this in preparation for his bar mitzvah. Now, you can imagine that today, we're like, well, you know, what?
Yeah, not even on the radar.
No, exactly. Just,
and that's what we're talking about, is that, you know, it's really important to recalibrate, you know, to understand that our children are still children. And even though they can much more easily be exposed to adult information, to things which could be, you know, they could over time become desensitized too. But it's so important that we keep in mind that it is damaging. And the same thing for adults as well, that we also – and I think this is such an important point, Howard, that even though there is the sense of desensitization, it still affects us on some level,
right,
which is very important. So,
interesting.
You know, I remember a while ago, I thought, when these beheadings were happening, I thought to myself, there's no ways that this could be on the internet. And
yet it was.
Out of macabre interest, I thought, because people were, saying,
talking about it, yeah.
And I was able to Google it. And the effect that it had on me, I mean, but that is pretty extreme, lasted for months. So I think for me, the availability of extreme acts of violence, which then becomes the norm, or certainly becomes something that we see or we hear about on a regular basis, there is a chance that we become desensitized to it. But at the same time, we still see it and we still get traumatized by it.
Very, very interesting indeed. Time is 8:37.